Brian Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
The world can be a scary place sometimes.
You're zipping along in the left-hand lane, and all of a sudden, ha! A couch.
But don't worry. We know someone who can help you survive your week.
Noonan steps in.
He'll help you deal with problems of the modern world.
Yes, because oft times, naked men will show up in your house, shower, and then make eggs.
He has all the answers.
He is one for four.
And when all else fails,
I can do 1,500 jumping jacks.
So sit back, relax, and allow Brian Noonan to drop some knowledge.
Good job, Noons.
Right here on WGN.
Ho, ho, ho! This is great!
I just had a bowl of bourbon and some crackers, and they ain't laying right there.
Well, it's the big show. Yes, it's a big, bad show tonight. Oh.
Well, good evening. Welcome. Glad you're with me. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Firmly ensconced, as always, in the Allstate Showcase Studio on a bustling Michigan Avenue, the first Sunday of August. Oh, the air is crackling with anticipation. The final month of summer. The dog days are upon us, I think. These are the dog days. I don't know. I don't understand that whole concept of dog days anyway, except that I like to lay around and do nothing. So I guess then every day is one of the dog days for me. Big show planned. As always, it's more fun when you get involved. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. When you call in, you'll be talking to the man. This is his swan song. This is the final regularly scheduled appearance of one Joseph Joey Gelman. He has been producing wonderfully for the last 3 weeks. He's here tonight, so if you are nice to him, you get to me. And I'm going to just go with Gelman. I like Gelman better. Because then, like I said last week, then I feel like Regis.
That works for me.
And who better to feel like than Regis? I don't know how he's doing lately. I haven't seen him around. Probably, if I go to a Notre Dame game this year, I'll see him just meandering.
I feel like he's like William Shatner. He just never ages. He gets to be a million years old, but then just kind of stays there.
I love Regis Philbin. He is full of himself, but the guy's a piece of work. So, I'll alternate. Maybe I'll call you Joey. I'll call you Gelman. I'll call you Kid.
You got to scream Gelman, though, if it's Gelman.
Do I? All right. You know I don't like to scream. I'm very low-key. That's what people like about me, that I'm so low-key. Anyway, if you want to text us, do that. If you want to stay abreast of social media, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. Karen Conti is back from vacation. She'll be here after 8 o'clock to, of course, answer all of your legal questions. We'll talk to Stacey St. Clair from the Tribune. She is in Rio de Janeiro. Ooh, at the Olympics. We'll find out how much sewage has been pumped into athletes' bodies through various pores or mouths or whatever else they're doing in the water. There's all sorts of local stories. And we'll find out about the Tongan flag bearer who was all greased up because Stacy got to speak with him. So we'll find out what it's like to be that close to a man from the tiny island of Tonga and if he was greasy when she spoke with him in advance of his Taekwondo competition. So there's a lot. That's at 7:30. So there's a lot to get to. And then, as I mentioned to Carm, I saw this story about an ump, a home plate ump at the Giants game, ejecting a fan. And it's because of boorish behavior. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and you can regale us with tales of boorish behavior that you have witnessed or perhaps participated in. So we'll get to all of that as well. And a very funny story that I found. It was reaction kids. Remember Art Linkletter, Roger? You're probably the only one besides me who would remember Art Linkletter.
Yeah, Art Linkletter. Kids say the funniest things.
The darndest things.
The darndest things.
Kids say the darndest things. And they also react to things that you and I would not bat an eye at. Kids have weird reactions. We'll get to all that, too. But it's been a wild week. As I mentioned last week during the podcast, and if you didn't listen to the web-exclusive podcast, man, you don't know what you're missing. First 10 minutes or so is on Facebook Live, and then the rest is on the WGNradio.com. And if you don't listen to it, you're missing out on some, award-winning content. If they gave awards for web-exclusive podcasts, we would definitely be in the running to get a nomination for a third-tier prize. But, anyway, I mentioned that I'm a bachelor this week because my wife has gone out to Los Angeles and is now in transit with my daughter, which will be part of what we talk about her. It's quite a trip. We'll talk about that on the podcast. So be listening after 9 o'clock and then make sure you download the rest of the podcast this week. But so I'm alone. Mm-hmm. And it's not been the greatest weekend, let's say. But last night, my buddy had called me earlier because he had listened to the web exclusive podcast because he's a dedicated fan. And he said, "Hey, I hear you're going to be a bachelor. I got to go to this party." And I am not a party guy, but he has a friend / client, and she and some of her other female friends had all turned 50. So they were having a big party last night at an art gallery. That's right, a soiree. Ooh. It was a soiree at an art gallery. And
the wine was flowing.
Right. And I couldn't go till late for a number of reasons. But he was like, "It would really be a favor to me if you would if you'd go with me, because I don't want to go alone. So will you come?" I was like, "Yeah, okay." And I thought, well, you know, one, I don't know anybody there except mm-hmm. for him. And even though this may be hard for some people to believe, I do not like to mingle. I don't like making small talk. I'm not good at parties. I was never good like on the dating scene, any of that. Mm-hmm. It's just not my forte. I'm good with people I know. I'm good in front of a huge crowd of strangers. I can do that just fine. But one-on-one small talky stuff is not my bag. So we go to this art gallery over on Fulton Market. And you know it's in the trendy warehouse and restaurant mm-hmm. district. So, yeah, you know, yeah. It's going to be all the beautiful people. Yeah,
classy places, no place to park.
No place to park.
I told you.
And yeah. we got lucky. We did find street parking, but it's one of those areas where there's a lot of, like, loading docks. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to parallel park along a wall where yeah. you're like, I don't know. Thankfully, my buddy was driving since it was his party. Right. I was like, "You can drive." But we get there, and it was... I will say that the most fun I had was wandering into one room in the gallery where they had all, like, Marvel comic art. Like, yeah, huge comic book cover art uh-huh. kind of stuff. So that was really cool. But I had to do well so my friend wouldn't be embarrassed. It was actually fun. I haven't gone to anything like this before where it's just, you know, kind of cocktails, and there was right. a little finger food, I guess. You could wander about and make small talk. And, you know, it's funny. And maybe it's ladies of all ages, but since I don't hang around with ladies of all ages, this is, I hang around with one lady who's one age,
right.
and then my daughter occasionally, and she's one age, and, you know, family members. But this was all women. A lot of the women had just turned 50, mm-hmm. and there were some younger people, like some of their family members or friends. You get some wine into some of these 50-year-old women, holy smokes, they go crazy.
Were they going up your kilt again?
No. Whoa. This one I was wearing some – I actually was called handsome.
There you go.
A number of – okay, because
did you keep looking around wondering who they were talking to?
No, I knew it was me. I had on some linen pants and a nice linen shirt. I was looking dapper.
Yeah.
Plus, there were – I don't know where a lot of these guys came from. There were a lot of Shrimpensteins at this party, like 3 feet tall guys. The women were all – listen, Joey, don't – whatever. But wear some higher shoes. But I'm – no, shorter than you, Joey. Like, tiny. Like, not technically little people, but small. So I immediately stood out because I was tall and well-dressed. And a lot of the guys were in just, like, shorts and T-shirts. And I was like, party in an art gallery. And the ladies were all dressed to impress.
Right.
There's the difference. So if you're going to a party, fellas, and I'll pass this on to the youngsters in the crowd, too. If you are going to a party, gentlemen, the ladies are going to be dressed to impress. So you got to up your game a little bit to get noticed. Now, I was not trying to get noticed because, you know, I'm spoken for. Off the market, ladies, too bad for you. Or too bad for my wife, however you want to look at it. But the point is, I had upped my game just enough. So I walk, and, you know, also a lot of guys want to wear dark clothes because they think it looks, you know, makes them look threatening and cool. And I went with some white linen pants and a pink and white linen shirt.
Ooh.
And, yeah, man. I was looking sweet.
Man, were you
sweet.
Standing out.
It looked good. This is how good I looked. I walked out of my house and my buddy went, "Whoa, man, you are styling." I was like, all right, we're off to a good start. But so that was it. So, yeah, I was told.
Tall, colorful, and handsome.
And that, yeah, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I was like, man, oh, man.
You got to get out more.
No. No, I don't. Because it was one of those nights where, you know, I wasn't driving.
Right.
The beers were going down too easy.
Ooh.
And I was looking handsome. It was, you know, thankfully I had an escort home. It was almost like I needed
trifecta.
I needed security to get me out of there. It was like James Brown. They threw a cape over my head and just took me down the stairs out of this art gallery. Before I dropped $1,450 on a picture slash painting of a pink bunny rabbit. I don't know.
Was this the style of artwork that was there, other than the Marvel comics?
It was kind of
comics?
A modern. It was a modern art.
Okay.
Well, an artist. It's an artist gallery. I think it was called the Mars Gallery, and a lot of the stuff was really cool.
Okay.
But there was one. I had to laugh because as I'm standing there looking handsome, I looked at the wall and it was. I couldn't tell if it was a photograph that had been painted. Or, I don't know, but it was just a big pink rabbit. And I thought, not like the movie Harvey.
Right.
Not like that. Just like a regular run-of-the-mill yard rabbit, but paint.
Oh,
but
not
pink.
Even a caricature type?
No,
no.
Just a
okay.
pink rabbit. And I thought, wow. I said to my buddy, you know what I've always said? The one thing that would make my house complete?
Mm-hmm.
A picture of a pink rabbit. And hey, look, there it is. So I guessed it was going to be $2,500. I was off. It was, what did I say, like $1,500
yeah,
framed.
Like was it an auction or?
No. These were just on display. If
oh,
you wanted,
okay. and
if
the
you
price
happened to be,
there.
Sure,
okay.
if you got all liquored up at the party
yeah.
and they went, man, that pink rabbit is cool.
and really matches your shirt. You
yes,
must buy it.
I must. It goes, what accentuates a handsome man? A handsome painting.
Thank you.
So, yes, it was all
you
lovely.
Know what? I'm going to use a word
don't.
That describes you that's not
that's
often
right.
used.
Huh?
Debonair.
Wow. I think it
you
should be used more. I am
debonair.
I know when I'm going out,
mm-hmm.
I go out. If I'm going to work in the yard, I'm not dressing up.
No.
If I'm running to Jewel, you're lucky I put on pants.
Right. You got
but if I'm going to a party, yeah. you know, and then here's how small a world it is. I walk in and I'm standing there, once again, looking handsome.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman walks over to me and she says, Brian Noonan?
Uh-oh.
And I said, of course.
Did you run?
No. I said, yes. Well, listen, I haven't been out long enough. There couldn't be any paternity suits or anything. It's been a long time. All that stuff's long gone. I've got no legal problems at a party. Turns out, she's like, I saw you walk in, and I thought, who else knows Brian Noonan? Her brother and I used to work together at Marshall Fields back 20 years ago.
Oh, my God.
And probably more than 20 years ago, 25 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so I know her brother and her sister-in-law, and we were at their wedding. They were at our wedding. We're Facebook friends. They live in Arizona. And she was like, I'm so-and-so's sister. I was like, oh, my God. So you have to take a picture so I can send it to them.
Oh, that was
all
great.
Right. Yeah, sure.
Wow.
yeah, look at me. I'm very handsome. All right, let's do this. Somebody's texting in, how do you get the podcast? Oh, you go to WGNradio.com. It's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
Go to WGNradio.com and click on the Brian Noonan page, and you can download all the podcasts. Oh, man, there's so much fun up there, isn't there, Joey?
Yeah, you get your tease tonight and then the full thing at WGNradio.com on Wednesday.
It's amazing. Let's do this. And then, oh, my goodness, this – you know, sometimes people aggravate me. This is a situation where if I found out who caused this, I'd be all up on them. We'll talk about that on the other side. It's WGN. All right. Sometimes people are dopes and it impacts everybody else. That's when I get angry. If you've been to an amusement park and you were going on a roller coaster, you've no doubt seen the little cubby holes, right? Usually you walk through and on the other side of the roller coaster where you exit, there's little shelves where you're supposed to leave what? Everything. Your purse, your phone, your sunglasses, your hat, anything loose that could fall off. Well, I guess that's not enough for some people. Anaheim, California, a roller coaster at Disney California Adventure was shut down for the third time this summer because a woman's purse fell on the tracks, triggering an automatic shutoff, stranding the train full of riders for about 45 minutes. 45 minutes stuck on a roller coaster because some woman couldn't leave her purse down where it was supposed to be left. That would be there's people who are scared enough, but they suck it up to go on the roller coaster figuring, all right, it'll be over in 90 seconds. And then imagine being stuck up there.
Miserable.
The California Screamin' Coaster was shut down while patrons were mid-ride yesterday when the ride sensed a possible impediment on the track. After a woman's purse fell, the train carrying 15 passengers was stuck about 30 feet in the air. Oh, man. They had to come, the firefighters had to come and lower them down using a bucket truck. It's already been shut down twice in May because riders attempted to use selfie sticks while the ride was in motion. I know I say this and it sounds, people get all upset, but sometimes nature will thin out the herd. If you're using a selfie stick and you just get lopped off, cut in half, whatever, I'm sorry for your family, but, whatever.
It's like Pokemon Go going off a cliff because right. You didn't look up.
That's, hey, listen, maybe we're better off. And is that harsh? Sure it is. It's a horrible thing to say. But sometimes I feel that way. Disney actually had to ban selfie sticks in part due to safety concerns over patrons trying to use them while rides are in motion. Again, this is just ridiculous. But, here's the good part. Let's all, you know what, maybe I should turn over a new leaf. Let's look on the bright side of things. Let's be Mr. Happy. Let's be Brian Optimism. Because I'm debonair and handsome. I might as well be optimistic, too. At least they know that the sensors on the tracks work. So there we go. We'll end it on a happy note. And then we'll find out after the news what kids think of something that we just would take for granted. We'll get all of that after this. It's WGN. Rarely do we hear Devo on WGN, probably for good reason, but I am going to whip it good. Brian Noonan, here until 9 o'clock. Karen Conti will be in after 8. She will answer all of your legal questions. I know after a week of not having Karen to answer your questions, you are probably just bogged down with legal problems. But we'll get to that after 8 o'clock. Next hour, we're going to get into boorish behavior at sporting events and any sort of public gathering. So we'll do that. But right now, there's certain things that make you feel old and then also make you realize that kids really have no concept of history. And I'm not talking about like American history or world history that they learn in school, but just things that came not too long ago in the not too distant past that were everywhere. For example, video stores, Blockbusters. I would wager that 95% of the people listening right now have gone to Blockbuster or Family Video or your local video. Because remember, before Blockbuster, Roger, this is how old I am.
Yeah.
There were like mom and pop video stores.
Right.
And when that first started, oh my God, it was the craziest thing.
Mm-hmm.
You'd go and there were movies.
Yeah, some of them even carried, hold on to your seat, beta tapes.
Now you are old.
Oh, my God. Was that before you?
Yeah, I was.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't beta. I'm not beta.
Because they would have the same movie on beta and VHS.
Well, because I do remember that mm-hmm. being a thing.
Right.
I don't remember it at the stores.
Oh,
but
yeah.
But we didn't. See, I don't think we had a VCR till I was in college, maybe.
Oh, okay.
At home, it was fun. Once I left for college, then they started upgrading all the audiovisual equipment at the house for my younger brothers and my mom and dad. But when I was there, it was still, go change the channel, adjust the rabbit ears, things like that. So there's this series of videos on YouTube by the Fine Brothers, they're called, even though it's they're two brothers, the Fine Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And they go around and they get kids' reactions to certain things. And I saw this yesterday. It was they were getting kids' reactions to Blockbuster video stores. And they talked to kids from 7 to 13 years old.
Okay.
And you think, okay, 13, Blockbuster hasn't been gone that long. What's it been, a year?
No,
a little over a year?
Oh, no, it's been longer than that.
Oh, no.
Blockbuster?
They've
been online, but not an actual brick and mortar. Oh, it's been longer than 1 year. It's been at least 5 years.
No, it hasn't been 5 years. No.
Right, let me look it up.
You're on crack.
I'm looking up.
So the kids were getting a kind of a history lesson about Blockbuster, and their reactions are very funny. But I'm wanting to know, as we play some of these for you, 312-981-7200 is how you get a hold of me. Are there things that you can't believe your kids don't have any clue about? Whether it's like a rotary phone.
Wow, you're not going to believe this.
Huh.
actually, there are still some Blockbuster stores
really
around the country that are franchised.
Okay.
Not company owned, but that are franchised. Let's see. I'm looking at a story from March of this year.
That would have only been a few months ago.
Yeah.
5 months ago.
News reports out of El Paso saying the city's four Blockbuster stores closed that weekend.
Okay. Well, that doesn't help us with the franchise. No,
well, the closing ordinance that said it was 2013 is when that official blow
official
came out.
Word.
So 3 years.
So 3 years is when they started closing them?
Seems like it, yeah.
Because I remember the Blockbuster near me, which was one, I got to be honest, it was a weak Blockbuster. They never really, they didn't have any answers. They never seemed to have, all the movies were always out, which was the, you know, I understand now, kids are all about streaming and things,
right,
which is great because you never have to be disappointed.
Right.
If I want to watch something on demand is the greatest thing because you are literally the emperor of your house.
Yep.
And your broadcast experience. I demand to watch this now. And then click, you press a button, and you're watching it. It's like, ah. But back in the day, remember, you'd be like, oh, man, I got to go. I can't wait. This movie's finally being released on video, and I'm going to be at Blockbuster that day. And then
gone
nothing.
Already. Yeah.
I loved Blockbuster would have an entire wall. So there'd be like 500 copies of the newest movie, and somehow they were always gone.
Yep.
And they never came back. And you're like, wait, they're supposed to be only for one night or two nights.
Mm-hmm.
Who's not bringing them back? Nobody's bringing them back. That's what's happening. So now I'm frustrated and I have to watch some third-tier movie that I have no interest in, but I've made the effort to go to Blockbuster. I'm not going to come home empty-handed like a schlub. Because then somebody will go, really? Out of the hundreds of movies at Blockbuster, there was not one movie that you wanted to watch? I'm like, no, because it's like if you have a taste for pizza and the pizza place is closed. You don't want to go have a gyro because you have a taste for pizza.
Right.
Well, I had a taste to see this movie, and now nothing else will satiate me.
Mm-mm.
Nothing. So they asked some of the kids. Here's some of their answers, and then you can jump in if you'd like. 312-981-7200. I'm wondering if you have little kids, younger kids in that age range, if they would know what a video store is. So they asked some of these kids, have you ever been to a Blockbuster? And here's what they said.
I don't think so.
No.
No. But I've seen a lot of these.
I think my dad has when he was a kid.
Yeah, like a long time ago.
They don't exist anymore.
I'm pretty sure they all closed down. I'm not sure.
Yeah, pretty sure they all closed down. Mm-hmm. Ours, the one by my old house turned into a beauty salon, like a day spa.
Oh,
yeah.
We had a very active one on Western Avenue, not too far from us.
Yeah. Are you whispering tonight? Are you putting on a sexy voice?
Me?
Yeah, you're talking. No. You're talking a little different tonight.
No,
like you're
kind of
seduced the listener.
No.
With your dulcet tones.
Don't I always?
I'm going to be honest with you because it's Sunday and I'm Brian the Optimist and I'm very handsome.
Debonair.
Yeah, debonair. No, it's you seem to be doing something different tonight with your delivery.
Very,
and it's unnerving me. It's unnerving me. No, that's okay.
Talk like this.
No, that's not. Okay. You know, there was just something. And I'm not saying you're affecting it consciously, it just seems like you've dropped it down a little bit.
No, I was
like
just
like you've got the mood lighting on in the newsroom, and you're Roger Flytrap who's going to just give it us the smooth move. That's what I'm getting. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's unnerving me a little bit because I'm sensing I'm getting a weird feeling in my stomach.
It's how I talk normally. When the windows aren't open in the car and the car next to me isn't blasting some god-awful song and I'm trying to talk to my wife or someone,
You want to be overheard, not heard.
Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah. So, but the Blockbuster that was near us.
On Western Avenue. I hear it was very active.
It was very big, and it's now an auto parts store. But what was great is there was a great Chinese restaurant right next door to it. So, it would be like Chinese movie night, Chinese food
like
movie
that.
Night, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of people would combine it.
Mm-hmm.
Plus then, or else they'd go, all right, let's get some goobers and one of those buckets of popcorn, bucket of microwave popcorn at Blockbuster, where
that
it looks like
have,
you're at the movie, but you'd microwave it up. Somebody, a couple texters sending in things that their kids would have no idea about, carbon paper and the rewind fee. Yeah, remember the rewind fee?
Yeah, be kind, rewind.
Sure, or else we're going to charge you $2.
Mm-hmm.
They asked some of these kids, going back to this, if they even know what a video store is.
do?
No.
I don't know.
It's kind of like Redbox, but an actual store.
I used to get movies there all the time.
Just a store where you go get videos or movies and then, or rent them, I guess, and then bring them back.
It's not that popular. But is it even still alive?
Is it even still alive? Is Blockbuster even alive? No, Blockbuster is dead, children. Yeah. Don't be afraid.
But you know what? The kids would always go to Blockbuster to get the games.
That was, later in life. Yes, as the years went on, they started carrying games as well.
Right.
And that's, I guess if you're, that makes sense because if you don't know if you like a game, do you want to invest all that money? Because games are pretty expensive. Aren't they?
Very
yeah, I did that. I use the rental service. Right. It's easy because a normal game is $60, so,
right, so
you're going to want to try it out first.
Yeah, and see if you like it or if you're any good at it,
right.
And then you can take it back. Now, but then you couldn't, like, save your scores, right?
True. And it's like a test run to see, do I like this or not, and then you would go.
They even rented,
get your mom and dad
they
up
rented
to buy
the game systems even after
did
a while.
Did they rent the systems,
yeah.
too?
Yeah.
See, I had so little desire to be anything have any involvement in video games that I didn't even realize that.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something nice about it. I remember graduating from the local mom and pop stores to when the first Blockbusters opened near me, and just the sheer volume. Because at the smaller shops, they'd have maybe 5 copies of a new release
because
they were budgetarily constrained. Blockbuster did not have that constraint.
I actually did work at one of those little mom and pops. A friend of mine that I got to know, it was like 2 blocks from our house.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go there all the time, again, trying to get the latest videos and everything, and just struck up a conversation with the guy running it. We became friends, and I actually started working there on Sundays. I would open up the shop and run it for, I don't know, maybe 6-7 hours until the family members could come in and run it for the rest of the evening. So... I always had the videos at hand to watch or take home first or whatever. And that was before the Blockbuster came in about 4 blocks away on Western, the one I was talking about.
Yeah,
before.
That was very active.
Yeah. That kind of killed off the little mom and pop stores.
Yeah, well, it did, because if you could go to a place that you were reasonably assured that they would have the movie,
mm-hmm.
or at least something, rather than... just this little one, because when we moved to California, we were in this condo, and literally right out the front door and across the street, there was a little video store.
Oh, okay.
But it was a little video store. This was before, this was in 2000,
okay.
So before Blockbuster exploded everywhere.
Right.
And, 90% of the time it was, you kind of went in and got whatever... whatever they had left.
Well, they probably only had like 2 or 3 copies of the latest releases, the good ones. They'd always have 1 copy of all the really bad movies.
Oh, sure.
And they were always there. But then Blockbuster comes in and puts up a whole section, 30 copies of the latest releases.
Well, let's hear a little more from the children. They asked these kids, how do you feel about going all the way to Blockbuster and they're out of the movie that you wanted to rent? Oh, my gosh.
And that's why people make YouTube today.
That's like the library, except with film and weird-looking boxes.
Now with things like Netflix and stuff that you can just watch, like, on demand, it's, like, not as bad.
That's when people were very patient. And now we are not.
That's true. Because we'd just go, okay, well, we'll get another movie. Now, like I said, with On Demand, you are the emperor of your own home. From the text lines, from the 708, we had a huge Blockbuster by me in Hickory Hills, always packed. My kids always had to get ice cream and the popcorn bucket. It's a Chase Bank now. I really miss it. There was a nice family bonding experience of going to get a movie because it was a family thing. You say, all right, come on, we're going to go to Blockbuster. We're going to pick out a movie or two that we can watch. And usually, at least in my case, it was, all right, we'll get one that's kind of family friendly to watch with our daughter, and then there was one that we'd watch after she went to bed, an R-rated action movie or a drama or something. But it was nice because you could go as a family and you'd get it, and as Roger said, sometimes you'd pick up Chinese food or a pizza or something else or just some popcorn, and it was nice. And now everything is, and it also, there was a weird sense of community, because I don't know about you, but I can't count how many times I was there and other people I knew were also at Blockbuster. It was like, hey, every family's at Blockbuster on Saturday night. So you could touch base. Hey, what's going on? Blah, blah, blah. It was kind of a nice social gathering for the 10 minutes you were there. Let's do this and we'll get to the phones. We'll get to more of your texts. We'll hear more of these kids. Oh, my gosh. A video store. Can you believe the concept? WGN.
I think it's inhumane.
It's inhumane that we need to pay more just because we are late on a movie.
This place is old. You can get stuff for way cheaper. You can download Netflix. All you need to do is pay for your account.
If you don't return the movie on time, they can't do business. They can't get their movie back, so they can't give it to someone else. So, I mean, it's fair.
There we go. Kids weighing in on late fees. Remember late fees and if they were fair or not. I like that the kids don't seem to have any problem, or they're young. They don't have a concept of Netflix being, well, you have to do this fee, and so it's, you know, it's so much cheaper. Well, not really. If you look at it, I forget what it was. I forget what a movie cost to rent at Blockbuster toward the very end. 312-981-7200. We're talking about these Kids React videos, and kids are reacting to the concept of video stores, and they don't get it. And I'm wondering if there's other things that your kids just wouldn't understand that didn't seem like a big deal to you. But first, Chris has been hanging on. He was a Blockbuster assistant manager. Hi, Chris. Welcome to WGN.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. So now we were going back and forth. When was the big closings of most of the Blockbusters?
I was leaning more towards 5 to 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
I got out in 2000, and when I was finished, everything was DVD and games.
Yeah.
And so I feel like it was about 5 years after that when everything, when Netflix kind of hit, and as soon as Netflix hit, Blockbuster was just in trouble. Because there's also the, what is it, Gamefly or whatever, the video game place, which is just like Netflix.
Oh, and that was back in the, that's when Netflix started, and you would actually get, they would send you the discs.
They would send you a disc, yeah, before, even before streaming.
Right.
They, you was, you know, mail order, rent a movie.
So was it just competition? Was it, like you said, was it the fact that all of a sudden people could stream everything, or they could get, they didn't have to go to the store, it just came by mail, and Blockbuster just was not quick enough to change the way they did business?
If they had jumped onto, I feel, if they had jumped into what Redbox is, they probably would have been better off. But I think they tried to hold on with the stores, and really their moneymaker was late fees.
Is that right?
That's where we generated a ton of money was in late fees.
Yeah, I remember always panicking. That was the big thing. We got to get it back. We got to get the movie back so we don't get late fees.
Yeah, and it was, you know, you could get a movie for, you know, one or two nights or 3 to 5 nights. You know, that
right.
changed over the course of the year, but you know, it was $2 or $3. Sometimes the price of the, you know, your original rental fee was then every day.
Whoa.
That you were late. So they were, and then I think what killed them also is when they got rid of late fees.
Uh-huh. I remember and that. Then, that was a big deal. No more late fees.
And that's, I think that was the start of, oh, we're in trouble. Our big moneymaker was nobody bringing their movies back.
Right.
And, you know, they just would renew it for another 5 days or whatever it was for the price that you originally paid. And
my thinking when that happened was, well, if people aren't bringing their movie back now when they're getting fined, what's the incentive for them to bring them back at all?
Exactly. Except that we would, I'm trying to remember if we had credits, we had something on file, because then ultimately you're just paying for the movie.
Right.
So if the movie's $19.99, now essentially your late fees are more than that. Well, you just bought the movie.
Bought the movie.
You may as well just keep it.
Yeah. Well, it was. It's one of those things that you, as a customer, you never thought it was going to go away. And then, man, it's amazing how quickly the business world can change and the environment can change. And something that seems almost indispensable is gone, and nobody bats an eye.
Exactly. And you know, the whole, I'm going to go to a video store and browse around.
Right.
used to be, I mean, you know, sometimes you would get something, sometimes you wouldn't, but it was kind of the fun of walking and looking at all the videos as they're lined up and shown in front of you, and then it just turned into a point-and-click industry. And
yeah, it was nice to be able to find, because you could find something, you could find a treasure. You know, if you're looking on the wall right next to the huge release, there'd be like three copies of something. You go, huh, the cover would catch your eye, and you'd read and go, this might be kind of cool for $2. I'll risk it.
Well,
Chris, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Let's get to Nancy real quick. Nancy, we got a couple minutes. Welcome to WGN.
Yes, praise God. We still have a video store where I can rent videos called Family Video down here in Pontiac, Illinois. We also have them in Streeter and Ottawa, and I believe in Bloomington. Family Video.
Yeah, we used to go to a Family Video. There was a Family Video near us. There was, and that was a fairly big chain for a while, you know, a regional chain. I know there was a big one in Homewood that we used to go to.
Okay.
Now, do they just have DVDs, right? They're not still, they don't still have video cassettes, do they?
No, but those were all bought out years ago. But they have DVDs, and you can rent the latest movies that have just only a few months out of the theater, or you can rent classics. You can rent.
And what do they charge you? What do they charge you for a rental, Nancy?
5 days for $1.
Really? Wow.
Really?
For a new release,
it's
That's pretty good.
That's pretty darn good. And then if you're late, you still only pay a buck. I mean, it depends on what you're renting. Now, if you're going to rent a whole season of Seinfeld,
right,
you can rent like seasons of TV shows.
Man,
so
well, I'll tell you what.
Like the third season of Seinfeld, it might be $3.
Nancy, I got to get to the news, but I appreciate the call. We're going to come down to Pontiac and watch a movie. That sounds like a great deal. All right, let's do this. Then it's news time on WGN.
Big Ten football in Chicago.
Touchdown!
Northwestern Wildcat football is coming. All the games and the Wildcat conversation right here. 720 WGN.
All right, on the other side of the news, boorish behavior leads to someone being punished, and I like it. I like it very much. And I'll read a couple of these texts and stuff. And James had said, one thing a kid would not know anymore is a shoehorn, which is true. I love a shoehorn. I love a shoehorn as much as I love when they crumb a table at a fancy restaurant. It's just one of those small tools that makes life that much richer. Hey, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Here's something else that makes the world that much richer. Roger Badish in the newsroom at 7 o'clock. Yeah, I'm letting the Who run. All Who in the 7 o'clock hour on WGN. It's Brian Noonan. Karen Conti will be here after 8 o'clock. She'll answer your legal questions. And after 7:30, we go to Rio de Janeiro. When my baby smiles at me, I go to Rio. That's from Pablo Cruz, 1977. Now it's another song that you get to look up, Joey. Pablo Cruz. I think it's
Pablo Cruz didn't
go
do
to
that.
Rio de Janeiro.
He didn't do that
the
one.
Fellas. Who did it?
Very flashy, flamboyant guy who plays the piano.
Oh, that narrows it down. Elton John?
No, not that flashy, flamboyant.
Liberace?
Guy. Nope. He was flamboyant and flashy, but he
Jerry
did not.
Jerry Lee Lewis?
Nope.
I'm going with all my piano players. Got all the flashy, flamboyant.
Flashy and flamboyant.
Really?
Some of them.
Not Barry Manilow.
No.
That's Copacabana.
Yeah.
That's a hottest song.
Allen. Yeah. That was his big hit.
All right.
Let me go.
Right. Anyway, apparently, and thank you to the myriad of listeners who have texted in, Family Video alive and well. The chain is thriving
really?
In the south and west suburbs, southwest and western suburbs.
That's great.
So there's still, I have no problem. I do like having Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
I like having on demand, but there was something I still like the quaintness of going to the video store.
Yeah.
Somebody texted in earlier, and this was a mom and pop thing because Blockbuster didn't have it. But remember the video stores where you'd go in and they had the adult section in the back, like behind a curtain or behind the swinging saloon doors, and it'd say 18 and over. Mm-hmm. And you would, like, as a kid, you'd try to peek behind the doors to see one of the covers of the videotape and go, oh, look, there's some nakedness.
I would never know anything about that.
Well, I never had the wherewithal to wander back in there.
Mm-hmm. By mistake as a child?
Well, when I was an adult, all right, when I was an adult, I did wander back in there, but there was no, I couldn't imagine renting those kind of videos from, like, in a public setting.
Right.
Walk up,
you
I'll take
up
Raiders of
counter.
The Lost Ark, yeah. I'll take Ghostbusters, and this one. What's that one, sir? Nothing. Really? Debbie does everybody? That doesn't seem... Are you sure this... Yeah. Ixnay. And then they got... There's no code on this, Bob. Can we... Would you go get the box?
They need you to update your information.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Do you still live
at... Because they're like, what kind of guy is wandering back into a closet and coming out with a fistful of porn, which was a great Clint Eastwood parody adult film.
A fistful of
fistful
porn.
Of porn.
Yeah, I know, right, yeah.
It was very, very good.
Peter but Allen was the guy's name.
He did that song?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Well, you know what? Pablo Cruz also did it, but Peter Allen did the original.
I don't care about
Peter Allen.
I don't care about Peter Allen. Right. I know it is Pablo Cruz. No, it's Pablo Cruz's version. That's the song. But I had the Pablo Cruz album, and they opened for the Eagles and Steve Miller Band at Comiskey Park in 77.
Ooh.
So that's how I know Pablo Cruz did that song.
All right, but Peter Allen did the original hit.
I don't know.
Yeah, he did.
He maybe did
all
the original.
Never mind.
But I'm telling you, Pablo Cruz, it was a huge hit for Pablo Cruz. How do we go from Pablo Cruz to A Fistful of Porn? Only on this program. That's how.
Now, which
Here
one is
it
this?
Is. This is Pablo Cruz.
Oh, that's Pablo Cruz. Okay.
Yeah.
The first one was Peter Allen. Is that right?
I don't know. Is he flamboyant?
Yeah, the first one was Peter Allen.
Yeah.
This one's better. This one's more got a mix to it.
Yeah, but you should see Peter Allen
I
doing
this. I don't want to see
He's
Peter
awesome.
Allen.
He's awesome. When my baby
smiles at me, I go to Rio. See? So, of course, we'll play this when Stacy comes on, because I'm sure everybody in broadcasting who's doing an Olympic hit is not playing this song or Copacabana or Girl from Ipanema, all
Ooh.
Those. So, all the songs that are being played every time there's an Olympic hit. Let's play something from Sochi. Let's play something Chinese.
Go back on the...
pretend we don't even know where the Olympics are. Back in the day when there was no biohazard for swimmers.
Right.
Somebody else said the mom and pop stores, that's where they make all their money from the adult videos that they sell.
Really?
I don't know. It's a texter.
That's what they're saying.
I don't take all my business advice from the text screen. You know, if I let the text screen do all my thinking for me, it would be a scary day.
Mm.
But there you go.
Okay.
A lot of people remembering, saying other things that kids would not remember. Somebody said it was ironic. We're talking about all this Blockbuster stuff and how kids didn't know that. There are actually people alive now who were here when women couldn't vote.
Wow.
So we're equating renting videos. To,
yeah,
that's a long time ago. Yeah. I don't think.
How about this?
Know. What?
And this is not too
long
ago.
Is this going to be a Peter Allen tribute again?
Not at all.
Are you on his payroll?
Not at all.
You're bringing him back to the public consciousness?
How about something kids wouldn't remember being able to do? Being able to make change without having to have the cash register tell you how much.
That's been going on forever.
Not ever.
Well, I've been going to fast food places as an adult for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and watching in horror as you try to give somebody a penny and then they have to do math in their head for a simple change transaction and smoke starts coming out of their ears. Kids haven't been able to make change forever.
That used to have to be like
I know you
get
learned
a
it
job.
In school, right?
Yeah, without being able to do that.
Well, that's because computers made it easy. Now the as you said, the register tells them how to make change,
right.
How much change they should have, and if you say, "All right, well, it's I don't know, pick a denomination. If it's 11 cents, and I go, oh, I have a penny, it's still 90 cents. Just give me the 90
yeah,
cents.
Yeah, right.
Instead of 89 cents.
Oh, the drive
It says
nuts.
89 cents. No, I gave you a penny.
Yeah.
But they don't even carry change anymore. It's like taboo to carry change. It's weird. Like, it's either like you use a $20 bill and make them give you the change, or Debit card.
Well, getting to, I try not to carry change to. I mean, if I'm out and I get change, I don't toss it away. I keep it. But then when I get home, all my change goes in a jar.
And true.
Once I fill up, you know, four or five Ziploc bags of change, I take it to the bank and then I get.
But the bank stopped counting them. We just did it the other day.
Oh, see, my bank will still do it.
Oh.
No, mine doesn't.
Yeah, mine got rid of all the change counting. You have to go to Jewel, and then they charge you interest to
CoinStar charges to use that machine.
Our bank now will give you the paper rolls to do it yourself. You have to go home, put your coins in a roll, mm-hmm. and then bring that into the bank.
My old
but
bank did that.
But they will not do that. They will not put it in a machine
Maybe
and recount it
change
for you.
Banks. Yeah. Because the bank I go to now,
yeah.
I can bring in my Ziploc bags of change, and they will pour them out into their own change machine and give me cash money.
Might have to
fold
change
in money.
Look at you!
But my old bank, it was that with the you get the. But then I'm like, boy, they're trusting that I'm not going to skim one coin off of every roll,
right?
You know?
Oh yeah,
because that's my scam. That's how I've made my fortune. I would roll my own coins, always leaving one coin off. And you may say, well, they weigh them. Nah, they don't weigh them close enough. Because I can get away with a dime off the top.
Mm-hmm.
Skimming. That's all I do. My
Look
whole life
you.
Is a skim. Yeah. And I take just a little bit off the top.
How much did you make last year in skimming?
$1,850 skimming. And I'm well on my way to breaking $20 this year, and it's only halfway done. The year is halfway. And it was horrifying, you know, because you'd make little stacks on the table, mm-hmm. and then did I count it right? And you got to go back, and then you ever rolled coins, Joey? Is that a skill that you have as a millennial?
I do not. I should.
It's hard getting that first coin is.
Yeah,
you have a machine?
Well, it's a manual.
Are you a drug
machine.
Dealer?
No.
One of those bill. Have you ever used
a
bill counting machine? Those are the coolest.
No.
Like you see in the movies?
Yeah.
Where you drop in, you know, a big stack of bills and it counts them out.
Yeah. Love that. I wouldn't mind having one of those, but.
Wait a minute. How often do you have huge stacks of cash around the house?
I cut little sheets of paper out.
All right.
but I've got a little manual coin. Machine,
is that
a
right?
Coin thing. You put the coins in until it hits a certain level, and then you take the paper roller and you slip it right in, turn it over, and boom, it's in a roll.
Oh, that sounds ingenious.
Yeah.
Why
and it's got little things like it'll do pennies, nickels, dimes, quarters.
All the popular coins?
All the popular
all right,
ones.
All the popular.
The latest
the hits. The big four?
The big four.
What about a half dollar?
Right.
Can I throw a half dollar in?
No. Not a half dollar. I don't have enough of those to fill up even.
Peso?
Nope. Euros, it fits into one of
those
slots.
A euro, a Canadian coin?
No.
Well, see, the Canadian coins always screw you,
too. A kroner from... No. Now, the Canadian coins almost are exactly like the U.S., yeah.
You get them back, and you're like, this is
And it has little tabs that you could slip in that'll hold the other coin columns if they're not completely full while you tip over the column you want to put into the roller. So it's pretty...
That's pretty nice.
So, you know, the rest of my life outside of the radio station is spent, you know, sitting in a chair putting coins in
You're
this
like some kind of fiscal genius.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're a Madison Avenue, or not,
not Madison
Avenue. Wall Street.
Wall Street?
You got Wall Street making your coin
More like
coin
Wall
sorting.
Street.
I always wanted, this is how dorky I am. I always wanted to remember, here, going back in time again.
Uh-oh.
Wow. This is like a big nostalgia show. Remember the ice cream man or the guy at the gas station would have the silver thing on his belt that he'd put the coins in?
Oh, the coin changer. Yeah.
You ever see one of those?
Yeah.
No. And it was like a four-cylinder silver thing that would clip on their belt.
Right.
And it had, again, the big four coins. As Roger pointed out, your quarter, your dime, your nickel, and your penny.
Mm-hmm.
And if you needed change, it was all right on his belt. So and it had little levers.
I bet you could still get one of those.
A little lever on each coin thing. Oh,
yeah.
It was so much fun.
I bet you could still find one of those.
Probably. I don't know who uses them.
Well,
there's still ice cream, man.
Yeah, ice cream. Yeah, the Good Humor trucks still.
Well, and I've
there's
never
even
seen
the
Good Humor truck.
They have two ice cream trucks that go to our grandgirls' school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We have an ice cream truck that goes around the neighborhood.
There's one right there, outside, in the Circle Drive.
Really?
Are you kidding me?
There's usually the Good Humor truck that's there.
I'm leaning back like an idiot. What? Like I have to have a strawberry shortcake right now.
Huh? They call it the high-speed money changer.
I love it.
You can get it for $31.46.
Yep, really? Ice cream truck.
There's an ice cream truck?
Right outside.
Hurry. Yell to him so he doesn't drive off.
Ice cream, you scream. I'm like a child. I hear the ice cream truck coming around my neighborhood, and I salivate like Pavlov's dog. And even though the one that comes by us is sketchy, it's not a name brand ice cream truck. Mm-hmm. It's just a truck that has, and it has more than just ice cream. I think most of them do now. They have chips and some other treats.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that wants to go, but in my mind, I think ice cream should still be a quarter at the ice cream truck. And the last time I saw an ice cream truck up close, it was like $2 or something for an ice cream bar.
$2.25, something like that.
I'm like, nah.
But when you remember that, that's where we learned how to multitask. Because in the same breath, not only did you have to yell out the window to the ice cream truck, to the driver to stop, which was hard because they're playing that god-awful
loud music.
But then you also had to yell at the same time to your mom, give me some money.
Right.
Right?
Give me some money.
Yeah.
Wow. It's funny. The music went on, and six people stopped outside the Allstate Showcase studio. Are they selling ice cream in there? Is there I got to get an eclair. No, sorry. No ice cream, folks. They're very disappointed as they walk away down Michigan Avenue, dejected. A lot of things getting answered tonight. Metro conductors on the Metro train still use the cool coin thing, and according to another texter, at Portillo's in the drive-thru, they still have the coin thing.
Oh, that's right, because they'll, at the real busy times, they'll have a couple of people out there, one taking your order and then one taking the money.
If I had a dollar for every text that told me Portillo's uses those, I could afford to buy one of those change things.
31.45.
There was a lot of people who
really.
You know what this tells me? Uh-huh. I need to go through the drive-thru at Portillo's more.
That's right.
Instead of getting out and walking into the place. That's so 18th century.
Well, wait a minute.
You like going in
and sitting down, though, don't you, and relaxing?
When I go to Portillo's, I either walk in and sit down, or I walk in and get my stuff and go. I rarely go through their drive-thru because I don't care. I'll tell you, at Portillo's, they're printing money.
Because
I don't care where they open, it is always packed. And granted, it's good food and good service, so I can understand why they're a success. But holy cow, I don't care where you go, that drive-through line is always packed. And they have it, they do have it down to a science.
Yeah, they
do. If you're going to sit in a drive-through line, theirs is the best because it's usually pretty speedy. But the rest of it... I don't know. It's so good for them. All right, listen, we didn't even get to this boorish behavior. We'll have to get to that in a minute because we got sidetracked with ice cream and Joey playing the music and me now salivating like an idiot because I want some ice cream. But I can't have ice cream because I'm doing a show and we have to continue to do the show, which we will do right after this on WGN. Right. I'm always amazed by the bad behavior of people in public. I shouldn't be amazed anymore, should I? Because we see it everywhere we go. You go to a sporting event, you go to a concert, you go anywhere, and there's people who are acting rude. They're acting like idiots. They think the world revolves around them, and they don't care who hears them, who sees them. It's like shame doesn't exist anymore. Well, finally, somebody had to pay the price. During Tuesday night's baseball game between the San Francisco Giants and the Philadelphia Phillies at Citizens Bank Park, there was a Phillies fan who was giving the home plate umpire too much of the business. So instead of sitting there and taking it, which, you know, baseball players are used to taking it, but the umps get it too, the ump decided to have the fan ejected at the top of the sixth inning. Good for him. So this was the ump's statement after the game. He said, all of a sudden, in what inning was this? The guy starts yelling, you suck. You could tell he was drunk, and so, all right, suck. Suck's not too bad. But then he kept it up for two hitters completely. Then the third hitter, after the first pitch, he says, I own property on 69th Street. You could come over and suck. And that's when I turned around and said, you know what? Get rid of this guy. You could have your wife, girlfriend, kids. They buy tickets. They don't have to come here and listen to that. That's exactly what he said to throw him out. So... good. I think it's time. I'm wondering, though, if you've been in this situation, if you're the kind of person who handles it yourself or if you go get an usher. And I know a lot of stadiums have the ability to text so you can have the person confronted without them knowing it was you who ratted them out. But last year we were at a Sox game, and I don't understand the concept now of people bringing signs to the game. I know there's a section, I don't know if they do this at Wrigley, but at the Cell, they have a kids area, and one of the things is so kids can make signs, you know, for their favorite player or whatever, and it doesn't have to be kids. And some people bring signs from home, crudely scrawled on a poster board with a dying Sharpie that you could tell it's on its last legs. And then they hold them up. And not just between innings. All right, you want to hold it up between innings or at the, you know, in the middle of an inning or at between innings. That's fine. But once the action starts, put the sign down. Well, we're there last year, and I'm with my buddy. Ironically, the same guy who took me to the party last night. Do I only have one friend? Yes. So we're there at the game, and the people in front of us kept holding up a sign. And if it was 5- and 6-year-old kids, okay, I can understand that, and I can deal with that a little more. But when you're a grown man and you're holding up a sign in the middle of a baseball game, I have no patience for you. And that's what, so I'm the kind of, I will seethe for a while. So I'll just sit there, and it'll be like 2 innings, and I'm just getting madder and madder, and my wife sees this. And it's almost like the old Popeye cartoon where the red will just start going up my head like a thermometer.
Right.
And at some point, it's going to hit the top and then
explode.
It whistles
when it comes out?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's going to be a horrible thing. But my buddy sees this, and he's seething as well. So he leans forward, and he just goes, "All right, that's enough with the sign." And the guy turns around like, "What?" He goes, "The sign. Put the sign down when the game's on." And he says it just like that, and I'm like, "Oh, no, we're going to be fighting." Because this guy was not alone.
Right.
He had his crew with him, his posse, if you will. And there was going to be some fisticuffs. But thankfully, once he said, "Just put it down when the game's on," I think this guy had a moment of clarity. You know how they say sometimes you just have a moment of clarity?
Mm-hmm.
This guy had his. And he realized that it was not worth getting into a physical altercation with two giant dudes because of a poorly scrawled sign that you brought to the Sox game, which I don't even know what it said because I was so busy looking. All I saw was the back of it. The back of it is just white.
You would think that if someone's going to go to the trouble of making a sign that hopefully would be picked up by the cameras, which would be in front of them,
sure,
you would also entertain the crowd behind you, therefore bringing them to your side by putting something on the reverse side.
Let me tell you a little something about me, Roger. If I pay to go to an event and someone is holding up a sign in front of me,
right,
I don't care what's written on the back. The only thing written on the back that would entertain me is nothing. That this like a hole. If a hole was cut through the back so I could see through it, then that would be acceptable.
Okay.
Other than that, no. Hold up something to block. I didn't buy an obstructed view ticket for a reason. I bought a full view ticket.
Right.
So I want full view. And again, if you're an adult, why the hell are you bringing a sign to a game? Nobody cares. Nobody cares that you love, you know, name your player, or that you've come up with a cutesy way to take the network letters and make them into a message. You know, nobody cares. You're not in high school. This isn't ESPN's game day.
MFG, my first game.
Or MFG. I got it. I got your first mother and goon. You can put the F in there and figure it out for yourself. All right. On the other side of the news, we are going to Rio. What bump music will we use? Oh, we can only imagine. Stacey St. Clair is down there for the Tribune. She'll check in and tell us all about what's going on. And we'll also check in on the Black Lives Matter march that is going down Michigan Avenue right now. So, Roger, I don't know if that's in your news, but you might want to peek out the window. There we go. We're getting all the traditional bumps open for when we go down to talk to someone at the Olympics. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. Karen Conte will be here after 8 o'clock. She will be answering all of your legal questions. But right now, we do go down to Rio de Janeiro, the Olympics. Stacey St. Clair is part of the wonderful team from the Chicago Tribune that is covering the Olympics. And if you're not following Stacey on Twitter, you are making a big mistake, at Stacey St. Clair. Stacey, thanks for taking some time. I appreciate it. How are things in Rio?
You know, things are incredibly windy today. The rowing events were canceled because it is so windy here that lagoons look like oceans with giant waves.
Wow.
And the rowers simply cannot
it's not safe for them to maneuver the waters in those conditions and those, you know, basically very light boats.
Is it, could it be a government conspiracy to create wind to keep people out of the polluted waters?
Or it's the rowers' conspiracy to keep themselves out of the polluted waters, right?
That could be.
I don't think so. They call this the City of God, but I don't think there's any conspiracy behind it.
Has there been any update? I mean, before the opening ceremonies on Friday, all we kept hearing were how bad the conditions were water-wise down there. Has there been any update on that, any change, or are things still as filthy in the water as they were?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they've known for a long time that they had to get this water clean, and I don't think it's not possible with their sewage system and how things work here, infrastructure-wise. So, no, I mean, it was not clean at the beginning of the Olympics. It's not going to be clean through the rest of the Olympics.
Now, on TV, things look, you know, they're on TV, so they look pretty good. We're not seeing things up close. When you're in these venues, when you're walking around, what's the condition of things?
Well, when you're near open water, which I am right now, you can sometimes smell that perhaps things aren't right.
Ugh.
Or it's not what I'm used to.
What, clean water?
But inside the venues, like the swimming venue is I think stunning. I was just at rugby today, and it looks like a very temporary structure. It's missing some of the, you know, the beauty that you saw in, like, for example, London.
Right.
But it's serviceable. And really, I think they gave up on just trying to finish everything they had to finish. And just, you know, we kind of joke that these are like the low bar Olympics. Like, it's good enough, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. And you know what? That's okay. They're trying to create an athlete experience. The athletes aren't complaining. They'll tell you they do notice a difference. But, you know, at the end of the day, they've waited 4 years for this. You're not going to let little things get in the way.
And things going okay for the United States so far. We're only a couple days in, but we've got some medals. Are we winning a few things?
Yeah, got some medals. Got the first gold yesterday. The women's gymnastics team did great today, and they've set themselves up for just, you know, dominating individual competition. So yeah, I think, you know, it was stunning. Venus Williams is out.
Yeah, that was a shock.
Yeah, I don't think anyone. And then they lost in the Williams sisters lost in doubles. So that was, I mean, Venus is out completely of the tournament. And so, that is amazing. I think will be shocking to a lot of people because that doubles partnership of the sisters, I think, was a medal people were counting on.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the most important thing. You talked to the guy from Tonga who was all oiled up there.
You know what?
The flag bearer.
Biggest scoop of my career.
It was. I saw it early this morning on Twitter. I was like, "Oh my god, I got to read this." So I clicked the link and I was reading. This sounds unbelievable because the world went crazy. Meredith Vieira lusted after him so openly it was embarrassing.
Oh really?
Yes. Oh, the coverage.
That.
It was almost like when I saw somebody compare it to when Brent Musburger was talking about AJ McCarron's girlfriend.
Oh, it was right.
It was that kind of like, "Oh my god, look at him." So I can't. I'm not going to try to pronounce his name. I'll let you do that.
Pete. Well, let's call him PETA.
Okay.
I really, you know, struggle with that last day, but I don't want to be offensive to any Tongans in your listening area.
I'm very big with Tongans. Very big.
Yesterday, I was walking to a bus stop in Rio, and I literally stumbled into him. And I was like, "Why does this guy look familiar?" And I kept walking, and I turned around, and then I saw Tonga on the back of his shirt. And I was like, "Excuse me, are you the guy with the shirt without the shirt last night?"
And that's a good opening, like, Stacy. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, and he said yes. And I said, "Can I take some video and ask you some questions?" And he was like, "Okay." And so I just whipped out my camera and my phone. I just started asking him a bunch of questions. I don't know if you watched the video, but he was a really good sport.
Yeah, he seemed very self-aware because he's tried to get to the Olympics a number of times. This is not his first attempt. He tried and failed a few times, so I'm sure he's just happy to be there.
Yeah, it's his third time. He's not going to, you know, medal here, and he got a chance to have his moment and he took it. He did say he had no idea that he was that shiny.
Okay.
He said there was a woman in line who kept rubbing the coconut oil on him just over and over again, and he finally asked her to stop because it was literally dripping into his shoes, and he couldn't walk without his shoes falling off.
Oh.
So yeah, and he said then when he got back on the bus to go back to the Athletes Village, people were like, you're trending in like every nation in the world right now. And he looked at the pictures and thought, that's a lot of glimmer.
Yeah, he was very shiny. But it's a tradition there. It wasn't just, hey, look at my pecs. They do that for a couple reasons, right?
Right. He said that in the Tongan culture, when you celebrate something or big ceremonial events, you rub coconut oil on yourself. And he was very clear. He was like, you know, I know everyone thinks it's baby oil. I don't know if Meredith Vieira was promoting that idea or what.
Meredith,
like,
she just wanted him glistening. She didn't care what glistened.
Yeah. Well, he said, I know everyone thinks it's baby oil, but he said it's coconut oil, and that is the traditional Tongan ceremonial oil. So, what do I know? He told me, and I was buying it. So.
Yeah, really? And you got
yeah,
the scoop.
Whatever he was selling, I was buying.
How envious were the rest of the Olympic journalists that you got the scoop with the Tongan greasy man?
Yeah, I literally have at least 50 emails in my inbox right now from journalists asking me for his cell phone number so they can call him and set up interviews. And, I didn't get his cell phone number. We're not that tight, you know. We were two people, you know.
You didn't exchange digits kind of with the guy from Tonga?
Well, yeah, he didn't ask for mine. I'm not going to ask for his, you know.
You don't want to look desperate, Stacey. You got to.
Exactly, right. Fine.
You don't want to look desperate. I have to ask why you want to be Australian. I saw your last tweet. You know, every time you go to the Olympics, you want to be Australian.
Because they have the best time at the Olympics. They cheer. First of all, they're the United States' best support system at the Olympics. I mean, they are the country. It's usually Ireland and Australia that also cheer for the United States, sometimes England or Great Britain. So I like that about them. You know, they're sort of bipartisan in their cheering, but they always are having like the best party in the stands. Doesn't matter the event, doesn't matter, you know, Sochi or London or Rio, they're having a blast and, you know, I'd like to be among them.
It sounds like fun. It sounds like that's the contingent to hang with. Leading up to the Olympics, there was a lot of talk, besides the pollution and the venues not being done and stuff. Crime is a huge thing down there. And there were a couple little security worries, little incidents in the last few days. Is there a huge military presence? How is the security down there?
They're trying. There's a lot of people who look like they should be involved in security. But I've not seen them actually commit acts of security. I'm trying to be very diplomatic.
Yes, we don't want to get you thrown out of the country.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's some, like, x-ray belts that, like, don't work. And if you just kind of push your bag, like, really hard through it and grab it on the other side, nobody stops you. The scanners will go off as you walk through. The metal detectors will go off, and you'll stand there, and nobody will come to you. So you don't have all day. So
right.
At some point, you just grab your bag and you go. The real problem that the journalists are having, at least, and I'm not trying to just tell stories from the journalism perspective, but photographers left and right are getting equipment stolen.
Really? Their rooms, like, or from the venues, or
from the venues? Most photographers. And the thing is, like, most photographers carry everything with them. They don't leave cameras in their room. There are instances where they put their bag down for a second to grab a lens, and they turn around and their bag's gone.
Whoa, that fast.
I mean, yeah, it's very, very fast. So I think that's been sort of the biggest problem for journalists, is just things being sort of swiped if you're not looking every second.
Jeez. That's...
But, you know, you're it's not a good thing, but it wasn't like we weren't prepared and we weren't told, be careful, right? You know, and so.
How much mosquito repellent are you wearing at any given time?
Okay, I hope my mother isn't listening. I have totally stopped the mosquito repellent.
What?
Because, Yeah, I haven't seen a single mosquito, and it smells really bad. I walk around the first 2 days, I'm like, I smell like a citronella candle. I can't stand this. And so I haven't seen a mosquito, and I have just decided to throw caution to the wind, I guess. Wow. But nobody I know has seen a mosquito. But I do have colleagues that literally bathe themselves and off.
Yeah.
And I can smell them too.
See, I got to be honest. I would be one of those. I would err on the side of caution. Have you heard? Now, there were reports from the women's beach volleyball and from U.S. women's soccer that they were getting taunted with chants of Zika. Have you heard any of those chants as you've been at the different events?
I have not heard any Zika chants. I was just at women's rugby where there were a lot of Brazilians in attendance. I certainly didn't hear anything like that. I have heard accounts and read accounts about what was going on with the Zika chants. I think some of them are in response to a picture Hope
yes.
Solo posted.
With her,
and so I think that's sort of, with her like sort of beekeeper's
yes.
outfit on or whatever.
Yeah.
So I have not heard anything like that. I certainly wouldn't, you know, wish Zika on.
No,
on anybody, but I understand it's attack on the Brazilian pride and they're fighting back.
Well, you're doing your part to bolster Brazilian pride by going completely unprotected. So we're very proud of
well,
you.
Well, now you made me feel bad. So now I feel like I got to go home tonight and then tomorrow morning they did give us all bug spray in our welcome bag.
I'm not making you feel bad. Your mom will make you feel bad.
I know. So yeah, it's okay. Tomorrow, bug spray.
Very nice. And what's on the agenda? What's on your agenda for the rest of the day?
I am heading into the media center here in Baja, and I am going to get my story on the women's rugby team falling out of medal contention edited.
Whoa, very good. Well, listen, I appreciate the time. Have a great rest of the Olympics down there, Stacey. We'll keep in touch, and everybody needs to follow you at Stacey St. Clair on Twitter. Read your stuff in the Trib along with all the other wonderful reporting that the Tribune is doing covering the Olympics. Thanks again, and be careful down there. Don't put your bag. What am I?
I will.
Don't put your bag down. Don't get bitten by any bugs.
I will. Take care.
Thanks, Stacey. Bye bye. That is Stacey St. Clair. Follow her on Twitter at Stacey St. Clair. She does a great job at all. She'd been at a number of Olympics, and her other last time, one of her Olympic photos went viral. Because it was like of her toilet exploding or something, or things, or water, brown water coming out. Something. All right, let's do this. And then, if you remember, a couple weeks ago, I talked about how I held a grudge for 30 some years against Hall and Oates. I've been beaten. There is a guy who can hold a grudge longer than me and takes it to a level I would have never dreamed of with Hall and Oates. We'll share that story on the other side. It's WGN. Sarah. I think that's what I'll miss most about you when you go, Joey. So far every week we've heard Sarah smile after I divulge my anger and the grudge that I held for 30-some years against Hall & Oates. My grudge, though, I never acted on it. It was just a slow burn, a seething rage that I kept at bay. Unlike a man in Norristown, Pennsylvania, Phoenixville man, he admitted in court that he vandalized the tombstone of a man against whom he held a grudge for more than 50 years. I admire this man's dedication. More than 50 years he held a grudge. And he didn't just wait the 50 years to act on it. As you'll see, this man is very proactive in his grudge settling. Paul Donovan is 69. So he's 69. He's held this grudge for more than 50 years. That's a majority of his life, he said, stating the obvious. He pled guilty Tuesday in Montgomery County Court to a misdemeanor charge of institutional vandalism of a cemetery in front of President Judge William F. Ferber. He was sentenced to 2 years of probation in order to pay $1,500 in restitution to the family of the deceased. He was also ordered to stay away from the tombstone in the cemetery. So here's how it started. Allegedly, 56 years ago, Donovan told police that the deceased... He and the deceased were childhood friends. And 56 years ago, the deceased stole $300 from a box in his bedroom. So he has been seething for 56 years. He admitted to defacing the tombstone this time. But the tombstone had been defaced many other times. First, a woman reported in 2014 that her father's tombstone was had the name John written all over it in orange spray paint. That same tombstone was vandalized again with the same name in the same color spray paint later that year. Then in December, somebody damaged the same tombstone by pouring a black tar-like substance all over it. Police set up a hidden camera to catch any future acts of vandalism. In May, the cameras caught the image of a man stealing lights that had been set up to deter vandalism. Man, not only is this guy angry for 56 years, he is deranged. See, maybe holding a grudge against a music group for 34 years is deranged.
You know, they say keeping the emotions inside is not healthy for you.
No, you got to let it out.
Yeah, you got to let it out.
But vandalizing a tombstone may not be the best way.
Probably not.
So then they catch him. They caught in November. It was the tombstone vandalized again, this time with black spray paint covering the last name of the deceased. That's when they finally identified this guy, this Paul Donovan character, who was just crazy. He told police he'd pay back any restitution minus the $300. So he is still holding on to that $300. It was. Did you ever see the John Cusack movie Better Off Dead?
No, I haven't seen that one.
It's an old movie. It was when John Cusack was a teenager. And there's the ongoing joke through this whole thing is there's a paperboy who chases him everywhere he goes for $2. And the kid will just yell, $2! And the kid's on a bike, and he turns up everywhere that John Cusack's character is, and he wants that $2. That's what this guy is with the $300. Even though this man has been dead, he carries this grudge for 56 years. You would think at some point it's more trouble to have the grudge than it would be to just let it go, right? It's got to weigh on you. I know my Hall & Oates grudge weighed on me a little bit.
It was really
It took a piece of my soul.
Yeah.
A little piece of my soul.
Mm-hmm.
It was finally settled. What are we going to do next week when Joey's not here and I don't hear Sarah smile?
We'll get Cody to play it.
No, it won't be the same.
Oh, I'll play it up here.
No, Joey did it. Joey did it organically. Yeah, That's why I liked it. It just came. And I don't know. And I haven't told him to play it in subsequent weeks. He just every once
That's
in a while
right.
will drop
yeah.
it in there. So it's got to
soothe. I want to, you know, it'd be soothing for you. Sunday afternoon, your grudge is finally over
right.
and you can enjoy the song.
That's true. I can enjoy it now. It's a little piece of heaven for me. So congratulations, I guess, to Paul Donovan, who can carry a grudge better than any man I've ever known. I don't know anybody who's carried a grudge longer. I don't know why you would. Hatfields and McCoys, maybe.
Oh, that maybe was generations.
Sure, that went on for a long time, hundreds of years. All right, my wife flew out on Wednesday, and as you know, when you go to the airport, sometimes you want to buy things because now they make it so you can't really bring anything with you, so you want to buy treats. Occasionally, not occasionally, every time I go to the airport, it doesn't matter what time of day, I will have one cocktail before I get on the plane just for fun, to start, because every time I'm getting on a plane, I feel like I'm going on vacation, even if that may not be the case. So I stop and I have a beer or a cocktail or something. A study came out the other day, or a survey, I guess. The most popular items for sale at the airport. I'll give you a guess. Joey, you can guess. The most popular item at the that people buy at the airport. For Roger, you
that neck pillow thing?
The neck pillow is not even on the top
really?
10.
Really?
Wow.
I was going to say that thing, too. I would say earbuds.
No, earbuds not even on there. It is water. Water.
Well, wait,
that makes sense.
You're not supposed to bring...
That's why you buy it once you get through security.
Oh.
You have to buy the water.
Okay.
So, actually, beverages are the king. They take 8 of the top 10 spots.
Wow.
Beverages. And it's different. It's not all water. Number one, or let's start at the 10. We'll go number 10. These are the 10 most popular things sold at the airport. Number 10, the Wall Street Journal. I wonder how, I know there are people
really?
Who really read the Wall Street Journal, financial people and things like that. I wonder how many people buy the Wall Street Journal just so other people will think they're smart.
Or it's in their lap on the plane. Oh, he's
That's what you
brilliant.
Wrap your Us magazine in your Wall Street Journal. So like, look at me, I'm checking the Dow. Oh my God, did you see what Kim Kardashian did? Why did I say Kardashian? Kardashian. It was because I was doing the crazy voice. Number 9, Coke Zero, the 20-ounce bottle.
Got to be healthy.
Yeah, you don't want caffeine or calories. Here we go. Number 8, king-size peanut M&Ms. Number 7, a regular Coke, 20-ounce. Number 6, a Diet Coke, 20-ounce. Then I am going to mispronounce this. The Glacial Smart Water, 23.8 ounces. The Smart Water 1 liter bottle. Number three is the large Dasani. That's too much water to drink before you get on a plane. Because I'm of the method that I try to drain all my fluids before I get on the plane.
You don't want to have to get up and wait until.
And I'm too tall for those plane bathrooms. I'm not going to lie to you. I have trouble going when I'm hunched over. I need to stand up straight. My posture is key when I'm using a bathroom. And to be in an airplane bathroom where I'm all hunkered over, I don't like it. Then the Smart Water 20-ounce. And the number one item sold at the airport, the 20-ounce Dasani bottled water. That would be my water of choice at the
airport. That makes sense.
20 ounces is about right. It's a fine helping of water.
Just enough
to get out of plane. Tina Fey's Bossy Pants topped the list of books, followed by Chris Kyle's American Sniper and Malcolm Gladwell's David and Goliath. Favorite magazines were Us Weekly, which I referenced, In Touch magazine, I don't know that one, The Economist, Life and Style, Star, Vanity Fair, and OK. Wall Street Journal is a top paper, followed by the New York Post, the New York Times, and the USA Today. So that's what people are buying when they go to the airport. What are you buying, and are you suing somebody because they defrauded you when you bought it? Karen Conti is going to be here. She's back from vacation. She will be answering your legal questions on the other side of the news. You can start getting them in now, 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text. That's how you get to Karen. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. 8 o'clock with the news, Roger Badish. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. It is 8 o'clock on a Sunday night. You know what that means. Karen Conti is here answering your legal questions. She is back from vacation. Her legal mind is rested and ready to dispense wonderful, wonderful advice. Did you have a good time?
Had a great time.
Welcome back.
It's good to be back. Yeah, we had a really wonderful time. It's one of those vacations where you don't plan anything. You just sort of drive aimlessly, and there's good to that and bad to that. You know, you get to places where you can't find a room. But it's fun because it makes you be flexible. And from the life that I have that's very structured and scheduled out, it was a nice relief.
Did you have to sleep in the car at all?
No, didn't
like
do that.
Like a vagabond?
Didn't do that. I did that in Europe one time. I didn't realize in Europe that motels and hotels close for the night.
Oh, do they really?
Oh, they close for the night. Like 9 or 10 o'clock, they're done. The innkeepers go home or wherever they go. And if you're on the road, there's nothing open. So that's when you sleep in the McDonald's parking lot in Nice.
Well, sure. If you have to sleep in a McDonald's parking lot, Nice is a nice place to do
that.
It's a pretty good place. So you're back, and everything is, again, we've got more stuff. And the big story, of course, is the release of the videotapes showing the shooting of Paul O'Neill by Chicago police officers. And since the tapes were released on Friday, people have been debating back and forth.
Sure.
Let's start with the law. Let's go to the law, because that's... That should be the final arbiter of everything.
Right, because if you're a lawyer, you're thinking of this case. Let's just say we're trying to determine whether the police officers did anything wrong. We go to the law. What is a peace officer? What is a policeman entitled to do? When can he use deadly force?
Right.
Okay, and he can use deadly force to prevent great bodily harm to other people or himself.
Okay.
Okay. So that's one way you can get it. So. In this case, I don't think the police can prove that, because he was running away. And although he rammed his car into a police vehicle, which was very dangerous and could have killed anybody, at the time he was running away. And there probably isn't a great argument that he was going to do harm to other people on foot because they had no knowledge if he had a gun or not.
There was the confusion of had there been shots fired at the police from the car. And as you watch more of the video, it almost appears that the shots that some of the police thought were coming from the car were actually coming from other police officers who were shooting at the car as it was driving away, which is not in line with police policy.
Well, right. There's a police directive, apparently, from Gary McCarthy, who said that you are not to shoot into a car just randomly, because even though that's not in the law, that was one of the police directives. So they violated that.
And that's still in place, even with Eddie Johnson as superintendent.
And I've got a comment on that, but I'm going to finish what the law says. So either you're doing it to prevent great bodily harm or death to somebody else. I don't think they can prove that. Or if that force is necessary to prevent an escape of somebody and that person committed a forcible felony or that person is going to go and inflict harm on somebody else. So the question is, he definitely was running away,
yes,
and this was probably necessary to stop him. That's their argument. Right. But you also have to show that he committed a forcible felony. Well, you have to go back and look what a forcible felony.
Okay.
It's a murder, attempted murder, rape, robbery, burglary, etc. So what he did was he stole a car. We know that. I don't think there's any dispute about that. So technically, under the law, the argument would be that the police officer knew he had to be prevented from escaping. That was the only way they could stop him. And he had committed a forcible felony. And if you look at the straight letter of the law, and again, this is not Karen
right.
or Brian
You're just,
being moral.
Here's
I'm just
the
reading
law.
The,
right,
law,
the law,
and I'm looking to see whether or not there was a violation. Now, whether this was protocol or not, it may not have been. They may not have been trained to do that. They may not have been trained, hey, when someone steals a car, you don't shoot them in the back.
Right.
But this is what they did, and we have to look at the statute. And so based upon this, I say they didn't do anything wrong. Now, you know, what this says about this whole, I mean, was this not chaotic? Does this not speak to, again, I am not an expert at a police, you know, training or anything, but it seems that there should have been some protocol here. The police were shooting to the point where they were kind of shooting in each other's way, that they could have been hurt. And it just seems to me that this stuff happens all the time, you know, not in our world, but in their world, it's commonplace that people steal cars or they're running away. Why aren't they trained better? Why didn't they react in a way that seems a little bit more ordered and structured? Now, that said, being a police officer is the hardest job in the world.
Right.
How do you make decisions in a split second?
Well, that's what Eddie Johnson said today, that they're, the police officers are having to make these split second decisions all the time. And I listen, I can't put myself in those shoes. I don't know what I would do. But I was, the one thing that troubled me, and you brought this up, is from the body cam videos. And those, again, I understand why we want them. I understand transparency issues. But I also don't know how much, you don't see everything. We saw about, what, five different angles from different body cams.
Except the angle that we really wanted to see, which was the shot that was fired.
Yes.
And where was the officer and why, you know,
and the police
that's
came
what
out,
we don't have.
Right. They said, well, that could be because, you know, they're still, everything's still getting rolled out and there's still some bugs that have to be fixed. So it's not, it doesn't seem like that big a deal. It's not, it doesn't smell of a conspiracy that one body cam, of course, it's the one body cam, as you mentioned, that you need to see, wasn't on there. But the fact that from one or two of the body cam angles, the police in the initial car after the Jaguar passed them, they jumped out and they seemed to be shooting not willy-nilly, but toward, because police were coming the other way too. So that created the confusion, I think, because all of a sudden you've got police coming from one direction, police are shooting from the other direction, and you heard them ask, was he shooting at us? Did they?
Right.
You didn't know.
Right.
So that seemed, that was where I got concerned. I was like, why were they just shooting down the street? You know.
Another aspect of this that I think is troublesome to me, which is if you look and you try to understand what was being said from what we know, at least now, the cops were very concerned about their body cameras during the entire shootout, during the entire course of this whole incident, which leads me to believe that the police are, and I've heard this from police officers in my neighborhood who talk to me, police feel that they are impaired from doing their job. They feel like they have a target on their back. They feel like people are disrespectful. They're now entitled to be disrespectful, and they are very concerned with being fired and, worse, being charged with murder. So they are tending to be more conservative in their policing. They're not going after the criminals as they did in the past. They're not confronting the criminals as they have in the past. And I think the numbers bear that out. But this concerns me that these police officers were so concerned about what they said and what the cameras were going to show and what they did and how they're going to have 30 days at desk job that, you know, I just worry that that is going to take precedent over good policing.
Well, it's going to put, it's going to, I think, put some police officers in danger, because if you're distracted by something else, their minds have to be focused 100%. I would never want to be in the situation that those officers were in the other day. And I don't, and we also know, listen, we've all been in stressful situations, not to that level, but we've all been in stressful situations where when it's over, you're saying things that may not make any sense at all.
Right.
And are not germane to what just happened, but because of adrenaline and nerves and maybe fear and everything else, words are just pouring out.
Right.
And so I can understand not wanting to have all that recorded, because most of it's not going to be relevant, and it will still be used against you. Even if it's just in the court of public opinion or in the media, you're going to be held accountable. Well, did you hear the language you used? Yeah, I'll tell you what, if somebody was shooting at me, I'd probably swear too.
Well, all the psychologists have always said that anger is fear, mm-hmm. okay? And that when there is fear, whenever you feel anger, the true emotion underlying it is, you know, is going to be that you're afraid of something. So obviously the bad language, you know, is not a crime, and people are going to take it the wrong way. But this is the way police officers talk. And for, like you said,
it's the way electricians talk and butchers talk and accountants talk.
You're going to hear my sailor's language coming out. Absolutely. So no, it's on one hand, it does give us the transparency we want. I like the fact that we saw this video sooner rather than later.
Right.
But again, people are jumping to conclusions, and I guess I just don't like the fact that the police officers are tearing the issue apart as they're doing it.
Right.
Instead because they know it's going to happen afterwards.
Yeah, when your biggest fear is, oh my, I'm going to be on desk duty for 30 days, that shouldn't be the first thing in your mind when you're going into a confrontation with somebody.
Right.
You've got to protect yourself, protect your partners, protect the public.
And remember the protocol when you have these things. I mean,
yes, they've gone through this training. They know what they're supposed to be doing. And I don't know. Now, of course, everybody's jumping to equating this with Laquan McDonald. From a legal perspective, we know that Van Dyke has been charged with murder. And again, this is just you guessing.
Yes.
We haven't seen all the angles. Are these equal? Are they the same kind of thing?
I don't, in my opinion, no. And again, I'm looking at the cold, hard law here. And in the Laquan case, you know, he was truly not endangering anybody. He was walking down the street. And here you had a kid who was just, you know, just rammed a police car, which was a significant, you know, serious. And it was in a residential area. And there could have been children. That was very dangerous. And the kid was so reckless that there could be an assumption. This guy's crazy. This guy's on drugs. This guy, you know, there was no evidence that he had a gun. They mistakenly could have thought he did because of what happened. Was it reasonable for them to believe that they were in imminent fear or that that guy was going to hurt other people? And I guess I could say yes on this. And, you know, I guess I'm going to err on the side of the police because they've got the hard job. I don't. And, you know, you don't put you don't put blame on a kid for stealing a car, but he put himself in a very bad position by stealing a car and acting like a crazy man. And so I think they're very different cases.
All right. Very good. Karen Conti is here. She's back from vacation and ready to help you out at 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. We've already got some text questions.
Great.
Get your questions in ASAP. Karen Conti's here on WGN. Karen Conti's here to answer your legal questions. You have one? 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text. Now, you've been back from vacation. Is your mind ready? Are you ready to jump in? Well, I am not, because I didn't turn your mic on.
Give me a mic. Now I am ready.
Now I'm ready. All right. This texter texted in at 6:45. They've been waiting all day. My father is 85 years old, and he's going into assisted living and will be on Medicaid. He has a leased car and credit cards. They cannot be paid as his check goes almost all to the home. Can creditors come after his checking account? He will only receive $90 a month and has to pay assisted living the rest. I will be breaking the lease and I'm worried no one else is on it. Thank you.
Well, you know, they can. They can come after his $90 in his checking account, but will they? And, you know, I think what you need to do, just in a practical matter, this is not really legal because, frankly, a contract is a contract, and they could go and get a judgment against him for the full amount of the lease, and they can give a judgment against him for the full amount of the credit cards, and they may do that. And if he has any other assets, our texter didn't say one way or another, but I'm assuming that there are no houses or anything else or anything in the estate. But let's just say that your father passes away and there is an asset, then those assets would have to be used to pay those judgments. So at the current time, if there's no assets, there's probably not a big deal because they're probably not going to, you know, what are they going to do, levy on a $90 checking account? Probably not. But the best thing to do is to contact them and have it in writing. My father's going on into an assisted facility. Here it is. Here's the contract.
Right.
Here's what's going on. You know, we're ready to give the car back. We'd like to break the lease. We're not going to keep the car. We'll let it make it easy for you to take it back. Credit card companies, I'm sorry to say, my dad's 85. He can't pay these.
Yeah,
Dan, you know, be straightforward and see what you can do, because they don't want to chase, you know, bad money. And they don't want to hire a lawyer and pay lawyer fees to do all that stuff. But don't be surprised if they go get a judgment and get against him just in case he does have some assets.
Okay.
You know.
So they could still.
They could still.
All right. We'll see. This came in just before you walked in. I slid off the road after being cut off, and my driver's door was up against a telephone pole. I wasn't injured and was about to call a tow truck when the fire department arrived with an ambulance, fire engine, snorkel, and jaws of life. I had climbed out of the passenger door and was walking. Oh, it jumped. And was walking around. I got a bill from the fire department for each fire truck and an extraction fee because they pried my hood open. Can they do this? It's a flim-flam operation that's already paid for with tax dollars. I never called 911 and didn't even need a Band-Aid. I should have called the Bunko Squad instead of a tow truck.
You know, I hear more and more of this kind of thing.
Yeah, we had a call about it a couple weeks ago.
We hear that kind of stuff. And I understand an ambulance because, you know, if you're taken to the hospital, you know.
And there's supplies.
Yeah, and I suppose that it is what it is. And there's like a, you know, sort of a an acceptance of the services by the fact that you're on the stretcher and you're being taken. But here, he didn't call, right? He didn't seem like he got any services except maybe the prying open of the hood. I'm not sure. But I don't know how much it is. Is it reasonable? Do you get charged for a fire department coming out? That I've never heard that in my life.
I don't know. I thought that I assume my tax dollars paid for the fire department
exactly.
to come out if there was an accident or something.
You know,
again, I don't know.
You know what I'd like to know? I'd like to know if there's any firemen out there who can tell me if there is a fire department that sends bills after they come to a fire or to an accident. Because that is something brand new to me. And it seems to me that you would have, it's like a contract, right? I think of the law. I'm just trying to think of how that works. And if I call you and you come and you provide services, I implicitly said, yes, I want that, and I'm going to pay for it. It's sort of like a cab ride.
Right.
You know, you don't make a drop a contract, but you know the guy's picking you up. They know he's bringing you to, you know, McCormick Place, and I know there's going to be a fare, and I know basically what the fares are.
Right.
Now, that's a contract.
But you don't have that
We don't have that here.
911.
This is a public service that you didn't really call upon to do anything other than.
And I'm wondering if there's also we got there and it wasn't really an emergency, so we scrambled all our equipment and our manpower, and that cost money, and now you didn't need us, so.
But he didn't call.
I know. That's
the
thing.
You know,
he didn't call. And
it's one thing if you created some emergency, and even that, they don't do that very often.
Somebody texts it in. They do bill. Depending on how far they have to go, the bill goes up. So that's for an ambulance. I know, I mean, this was years and years ago. I remember having to call an ambulance for my grandmother and that we had to pay to take her to the hospital.
Sure.
But I don't remember if we called 911. We must have called 911. We wouldn't have just called an ambulance company.
That's been going on for a long time, the ambulance situation.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, in the past at least, the city would call a private ambulance to do that. And they would be on call to do that. And then you get the private ambulance bill. And it's always higher than you would ever imagine it to be.
Yeah, because it's not. You know, usually they're taking you to the closest hospital.
Right.
So it's not,
right.
Well, we're going to take you to Wisconsin. There's a good one up in Milwaukee. We'll take you up there.
Brian, if I could pipe in, I just
you
looked up
might.
The city of Chicago.
Thank
and
you,
they
right.
do charge for emergency services. Excuse me. If you're not covered by medical insurance, Medicare or Medicaid, or are not a member of an HMO. Basic life support for ambulance services, $900. Advanced life support, $1,050. Oxygen, $25, regardless of the amount. Mileage, $17 per mile.
$17 a mile?
I double-checked that. Yep.
All right.
Okay,
if you're going
so,
to pass out in the hospital
so,
steps.
So the ambulance, okay. Now, does it say anything about the a fire? Fire engine coming for something
like
this?
Well, that when an ambulance, in fact, just happened across the street last night from our place. It is standard operating procedure that when an ambulance is called for, a fire engine goes along with. So
really?
It's standard operating procedure and has been for decades in the city of Chicago.
So I guess I wondered now, too, is there a price on the fire engine coming?
I would imagine, even though I'm just glancing
just
at this right now, and I'm just looking at saying ambulance services on this page that I'm looking at. It says ambulance bills, City of Chicago.
Wow.
Do they charge by the gallon of water if you have a fire, God forbid?
Well, that would be on another page. Alarms, I would have to look
they charge,
for.
Charge it by alarm. Four-alarm fire costs more than three.
But
alarms.
That just doesn't cities, seem right.
A lot more cities are starting to issue those kinds of bills because they can't afford to tax enough.
And again, that was for people who had no insurance, correct? So if you're not insured, if you're not Medicaid, Medicare, they're billing somebody.
Right.
It used to be if you had insurance, just go to your insurance. And I'm one, you know, then you have to see how much your insurance is going to cover.
Well, I'm going to do a little research on this.
All right.
And I may call up one of my alderman friends who's going to know the answer to this.
That would be good.
Yes.
I think that would be fantastic. So that is that. We've also got, what else was, there's a legal story. I'm going to give it to you after. I want to talk to you about this, too, because it's one of those stories, and you know I'm a big common sense guy when it comes to the law. I think, I understand the law is sometimes complex and multi-layered, but sometimes you look at a case and you go, there is no reason that this is going on. And so I'll give it to you. I don't want to sandbag you with it.
All right.
We'll talk about that on the other side of the news. And what's the deal? The president gets to give pardons at the end of his term?
Well, he can do it at any time.
Yeah.
He can do it at absolutely any time. But they seem to do it at the end, you know,
right.
And I'm sure it's because they're hoping that no one's paying attention to anything they're doing. And so they just, you know, pardon the people they want to pardon. Apparently, Obama has pardoned a lot of people and has plans to pardon more people. And there's different kinds of, you know, we use the word pardon, but there's also commutation of sentence, which really is like, for instance, he could say to Blagojevich, I'm not going to pardon you for your crime. I'm going to commute your sentence, meaning you've already served your time.
Time served.
You're done.
Okay. But he's still
a felon. He would still be, a felon, and that sentence was not erased.
Okay.
But was there anything in the
news?
No,
it was just one of those things that, you know, some people, there's always people who are happy about it and some people who are upset about it.
I really feel like it's a good thing. I mean, in the right situation, and not for bad reasons or political reasons, but there's a lot of people who really screwed up and did some bad things when they were young and then turned it around, you know, and they did good things and now they can't vote or they can't do this or they can't do that. And, you know, you want to encourage people to turn it around. You want to encourage people to turn over a new leaf and do well. And I like to see those stories.
Karen Conti's here answering your legal questions. If people don't get through to us tonight, how can they reach you during the week?
Call me at 312-332-7800 or email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right. Questions coming in on text and on phone. We'll get to those on the other side of the news. This is 720 WGN. Brian Noonan, Karen Conti, 720 WGN. If you have a legal problem, this is where you can come and get it handled. Karen Conti comes in every Sunday night and helps you out. 312-981-7200. That's the number. We were talking about fire trucks and ambulances and charges like that, and Dale wants to weigh in on that. He's been holding on. Hi, Dale. You're on WGN.
Yeah, how are you doing tonight?
We're good. Thanks.
Okay. I am a member of a fire district a little bit south of Rockford.
Okay.
On accident calls, if it's an in-district person involved in the accident, there is, as far as fire trucks, there is no charge. If they are out-of-district person, Illinois state law allows us to charge them. And it's a set rate set by the state for a set amount of dollars per hour that the engine is there, and up to I forget what the exact amount of personnel, but for personnel to be unseen. As far as still the person that was involved in the accident, they did not call. Obviously, somebody called 911.
Right.
That is a nice convenience of everybody with a cell phone.
Sure.
We get called out in many calls that there's no call because somebody thinks they saw something and they called 911 on their cell phone. But Illinois state law allows to charge out of district people.
So if I'm driving through your district, I don't live there and I get in an accident and you guys come out, then you're going to charge me. But if I live in your district, there's no charge.
That is correct.
Okay.
As far as the fire engines and that. The ambulance, you know, that's a different person. That's a different situation. But, if you're an in-district person and we are called to, you know, extricate you, whatever, out of your vehicle or not, we cannot charge, we do not charge you. But if you're out of district, Illinois state law allows us to charge a certain amount per hour for the engine and personnel.
All right. Well, Dale, thank you for the information. We appreciate it.
And I don't have any reason to not believe that, but that sounds bizarre.
Well, they probably, the only justification I can think of is, well, I live in the district, so I'm already paying for the fire department. If I'm from out of town,
course,
I'm not paying. But I know, but I, that's the only justification that even makes a modicum of sense.
Yeah.
That they go, well, this person doesn't live here. They don't pay into our tax rate. We're going to charge them. and Bob,
right,
who lives down the street, well, we got to take care of Bob because he pays his taxes here. Seems very strange. All right, we have a wrongful termination question.
Okay.
Coming in from the 312. Recently working in a bar as security, I was in the process of removing someone, and another security personnel violently pushed the patron out the front door. As I appeared first through the front door, the manager standing outside came up to me immediately, got in my face, and told me to, quote, punch out and go home. Myself and the owner will call you tomorrow, end quote. I wasn't the one who laid hands on the patron. The manager reacted to the person flying out the front door, as they do not want you to lay hands if not needed, but I was the first one he saw. I told him it wasn't me and asked why. He just repeated himself and didn't give an answer. I didn't punch out. I told him to get the GM. We spoke. I spoke to the manager and finished my shift thinking it was quashed. Got a call the next day saying, don't come into work. 3 days later, I was fired. GM said I didn't listen to my manager and punch out immediately. Even he was wrong. It's on video. Do I have any recourse?
That's really, I get these questions, one almost every day. And the answer to the question is no, you don't have any recourse. That in this state, you're an employee at will, unless you have a contract, and most people don't. And your employer can fire you for any reason whatsoever, except those protected reasons like race, age, handicap, gender, religion, national origin, that type of thing. So in this case, even though your employer was wrong and you weren't the one who threw the guy out, even for wrong reasons, even for reasons that are false, even if they made it up completely because they didn't like you, that is not a reason to sue your employer.
Okay.
You know, and people think that you have a right. You think people think you have a right to be fired rightfully, and you really don't.
No rights at all.
You know, and maybe the only issue is going to be whether or not you get your unemployment, and you're going to maybe have to fight that and say that I really wasn't the person. You're going to need to get that videotape and say I didn't do anything wrong. I wasn't insubordinate. But see, that's what they're going to say. They're going to say that after this incident, you were told to do something, and you didn't do it. And that was the reason we fired you. You were insubordinate. You weren't following company rules.
How hard is it to prove when you say you can't be fired if you're in one of the protected areas? How hard is it to prove that that's why you were really fired? Because, as we said, the employers are always going to have a different reason. They're never going to say, we fired them because they were too old or because they were a woman or because they were gay or whatever. We fired them for insubordination or not filling out the correct forms. It's got to be really difficult.
It's very hard. And, you know, the first thing, you know, and I handle cases on both sides. I handle cases for employers. And there's plenty of employees who trump up a case.
Sure.
They know they're going to be fired because they're not performing, because they're coming in late, because they're just screwing around at work. And they start to make comments and say, oh, someone's sexually harassing me or someone's, racially discriminating against me. And they trump up the charges. On the other hand, if you really do think that you're being discriminated against, the first thing you're going to do is get your personnel file. And if your personnel file says for 10 years you were a great employee and you got raises consistently and you got excellent reviews, and you know, all of a sudden a boss comes in and made some comments that were maybe gender sensitive or whatever, and you reacted poorly and all of a sudden you're fired, then you have a bunch of facts. You can say, I was a good employee and it was documented.
Right.
I had someone say something to me and I told them I didn't like it. They retaliated by firing me for no good reason. After 10 years, wouldn't you think that I was a good employee? That's how you prove your case. Or you can prove your case with circumstantial evidence, like they treat all African Americans differently, or they treat all people over 40 differently. And look who they replaced me with. They fired four people over the age of 40 and they replaced them with 23-year-olds.
Okay.
You can use that kind of circumstantial evidence to prove your case. But again, it is very difficult. And I tell people almost all the time that, yes, you might have a lawsuit, but the best thing to do sometimes is walk away. get a new job and make sure your personnel file reflects something positive so that you don't have trouble getting a job down the line.
And do you really want to keep working for somebody who wants you gone?
Well, that's right. You don't want to be in that work environment because it's extremely stressful.
Yeah.
I mean, if we've all maybe been there where you have a boss who's really difficult or you have someone who doesn't like you and you're sitting there for 8 hours a day with somebody, you know, the first thing you should do instead of calling a lawyer is you should start the job search.
Yeah.
Again, I also don't want to say this because we had this whole Trump issue.
Well, I was just going to say, she should just quit.
She should just quit her job. And, you know, maybe, you know, I'm not going to defend Trump because I'm just not. But maybe the question wasn't quite fair because in her situation, in Ivanka's situation, she runs the show and she's got the name Trump. So who's going to sexually harass her?
Nobody.
It's not that no one is going to, she doesn't put herself in that situation and she's a better woman than anyone else. She's the boss. And it's going to be hard for someone to actually do that, knowing who she is and that she writes the paycheck. So that's not a fair question. But it also, what he said doesn't make sense because, you know, think about all the women. You have your dream job. Mm-hmm. Someone has the balls to, you know, harass you or someone engages in boorish behavior and starts saying things to you at the workplace. So you're going to quit your job, start all over from scratch somewhere else. And how are you ever going to succeed if you keep having to, you know, it happens to women all the time.
In that situation, I think you should pursue some sort of legal action. But in that case, if a woman is being sexually harassed at work and she decides, okay, she comes to you and says, this is what's happening. Here's the record. I have a good personnel file. It's obvious that I'm a good employee. This is what's happening. And it's documented a couple times. I put in a couple complaints. They didn't do anything about it. I don't think she should have to quit her job and go somewhere else. But what's the reality then of her staying in her current job? Do they, you know, and I'm sure every company handles this differently, and once a lawsuit is filed, does the harasser go? Do they have both stay? How does that work?
It depends. You know, it depends, Brian. I had a situation where it was a big chain store, and the company couldn't have handled it better. Both were long-term employees. The guy was harassing her. There's no question about it. He was very interested in her and kept asking her out. She kept saying no. They did an investigation, and there was evidence that he was doing it. They took him, and they put him in another store.
Okay.
And they said, if you do it one more time to anyone else, you'll be fired. And to my understanding, he didn't, and he continued to work there. But they, you know, companies like will investigate and say it didn't really happen, or maybe it's just insensitive.
Well, where's the line?
I see that employers don't do the right thing a lot of the time. You know, so you put the guy right back with the other woman, and you got a bad situation. Sometimes you can't separate people, Brian. You got a small workplace
with
five people. What are you going to do? Like, get a new office?
Well, that's just it. In the perfect world, the person doing the harassing should have to go. It shouldn't be the victim who has to leave, but is that always a feasible situation?
And the obligation of the employer is not necessarily to fire the harasser, but to just tell that person to stop doing it and to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Okay.
So a lot of times it happens where, listen, don't harass her again. Don't do it. But it's still uncomfortable now. Now he's not harassing her, but now he's mad. Now he's mad that he got called on it. He got a little mark on his record. And so now he starts treating her poorly.
Yeah.
And so you get that going on. And then you have the woman leave. So, you know, only 70 out of all the harassment that goes on, only 30% of all women report the harassment.
Really?
So if you think about the numbers and the lack of productivity and the women who are changing jobs, you know, for bad reasons, it's a really bad thing in the workplace still after all these years.
You would think because, you watch Mad Men or a period piece that's wow. And I know I'll sit with my wife and I'll say, oh, do you have to do this? And she's like, she gets all upset. Really? And no, I don't make coffee. I don't do this. No, I don't sit on anybody's lap and take dictation.
Right.
But I mean, you would think that that's all gone, but it's obviously
No, it's not. And people, again, I just don't know that sexual harassment is much about the sex as it is about power and control.
Yeah.
And I think that there are still people there who think of their workplace as their little playground,
mm-hmm.
and they think they can do what they want, can hire who they want because of the way they look or the way, and will harass them. And it's not about dating them, because if they wanted to date them, there's a way to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Karen Conti's here. She's answering your legal questions. We are discussing all sorts of legal matters. You have a question, get it in quickly. 312-981-7200. That is the phone. That is our text. That's how you get a hold of us. But you know, Karen, people always wait. So how do they get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me at kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, get your questions in. More with Karen on the other side. It's WGN. A few more minutes with Karen Conti as she answers your legal questions at 312-981-7200. Get them in as quickly as possible. Karen, we got a text from Don. Says, if while giving a speech in an event, I'm constantly interrupted by a baby, can I sue the parent? It's good. Listen, we know what? We have very powerful listeners.
Well, that's an act of God, and I don't think a parent is responsible for the cries of its baby.
All right, so Don, you cannot sue. And don't tweet at that baby either. The baby didn't do anything, so no tweeting and no suing. That's out. You've got legal advice right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Here is Dorothy. Hi, Dorothy. You're on WGN.
Hello?
Hi. What's your question, Dorothy?
Well, my question, I'll try to make it brief. I'm currently employed with someone that has asked me to give up school to take care of her as a caregiver. And I'm almost completed with school, about 2 more years, and I will have my PhD. And I just want to create a legal document to protect myself, because it's not about the money, but if I'm giving up something that I'm going to be done in 2 years, she may live 10 more years, and I hope that she does, but I just want to know how to protect myself financially, because she has placed me in her will.
Yeah, interesting. That's interesting. That happens. You know, you see that quite a bit. There was a very famous case in Illinois where a person stayed at a farm and helped farm with the elderly person, and the oral promise was, I'm going to leave the farm to you if you help me throughout these last years of my life. And there was litigation involving that, and it was upheld. This is, you're right to get this in writing, and this is why. You can have a contract with, I'm sorry if it's a male, Dorothy, that you're taking care of?
A female.
Okay. Okay. So you have a contract with her, and you say that you're giving up, you know, your school, and you know, it's very valuable to you to finish getting your PhD, and you'll set out what you're giving up, and then what is she leaving you? Specifically in the will, what is she going to leave you? Is she going to leave you a house? Is she going to leave you all her money? And it should be quantified in there so that, let's just say in a year she starts to maybe lose, you know, her senses a little bit, and that happens, and she get paranoid, and maybe family comes in and wants to say, don't leave it to Dorothy. Dorothy is trying to take her money. And you also don't want to be an undue influencer, right? You don't want to be someone who is deemed to be trying to overly influence her. So
exactly. So
when that happens, then in the event that she changes her will, then you can sue the estate if you need to, and basically say, I had this contract. You are then basically a creditor of the estate, and you can sue the estate and get the money that way, even if she doesn't leave you in the will. So you would have a right beyond, I mean, she would agree to will that to you, but if she doesn't do that, and if she goes astray, then you have a right to sue the estate. But you have to have it done correctly, and call me.
That's,
I can probably, I can give you some people who would draft that up for you to make sure that we take care of that correctly. Because that's a good thing for you to do. If you're going to give up something, get something in writing.
How does Dorothy get a hold of you?
Why don't you email me with that, Dorothy, just so I know where you are and all of those things, what county, so that we can get you someone who's convenient. kconti@kcontilaw.com.
All right, Dorothy, good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right.
You're welcome. Roger, he's just upstairs. No, it's a different Roger. He's got a question for you. Hi, Roger.
Yes.
What's your question for Karen?
I'm 82 years old. I'm from Rockford, Illinois. And in 2000, when my wife was alive, we filled out a will and a trust. And now that my wife has passed on, I would like to remove her from the trust and the will. And also, I would like to make a change, executors.
Okay.
I have 3 sons. I would like to take number 2 son and move him as A, the number 1 executor, and number 1 son, move him down to number 3 as the third person.
Okay. Well, Roger, here's what I do, and it's good that you're asking this question, because for everybody out there who thinks that they can just change the will on the face of the will by writing on it, No, you can't. Okay, because that is not a, that won't will not be valid. Any change in the will needs to be witnessed as it was in the past. What I would do, Roger, if your lawyer is still around who drafted it in the first place, call him or her up and say, I want to make the following changes. It's probably less expensive to go to that lawyer because the lawyer should have it in his or her computer. Okay, if for some reason that lawyer is not around or you don't like that lawyer, I can probably give you somebody out there who can do this for you. I don't do a lot of practicing in Rockford, but I'll see if I can find somebody for you and who can do that on a reasonable basis, and we'll get that changed for you.
Let me ask a question. Mm-hmm. All I want to do is make those two changes, and if I get a notary and have a notary sign it, will that work?
Now, the problem is that this needs to be witnessed in the same way that your will and trust were witnessed. So, you know, I'm not a probate lawyer. I'm not an estate planning lawyer. But that formality has to be handled correctly. And I would say that if you want to make that change and you think you can write on top of the will, you just can't do that. It sounds like you should be able to do it and have it notarized, that you signed it and that you wanted to do it. But the... I would hate for your sons to be in argument about it. So, you know, for maybe, what is it going to cost? Maybe $500, you can get this done by a lawyer and get it done correctly and not have any concerns about it. Mm-hmm. And you always want to have your will checked because I just had somebody who had a will maybe 15 years ago, and now he's not doing so well. I sent a lawyer out to the house, and it turns out that he had some things that, in a tax standpoint, were not effective. And so they changed a couple things that he didn't even want to change because it helped him out and saved them about $20,000.
Oh,
yeah, you know, and that was a lot of money for the family.
It
so it made up for the fact that he hired the
lawyer
more than made up for
exactly.
it. So you should have your will looked at, Roger. And if you want to call me and get a referral from me, I'm happy to try to do that for you.
And
okay?
What's that number again, Karen?
That's 312-332-7800.
All right. Good luck, Roger. Hope it works out. And yeah, for the amount, that can't be an expensive proposition to just have a couple changes made to your will.
No.
But it's well worth it to not have anything contested when it's when it's time.
And you know, and maybe his will was done 15 years ago. Yeah. If it was, you know, maybe there's new stuff that.
Well, he said it was done in 2002,
I think. 2000,
when his wife was still
alive. So that's, that's enough years ago. Yeah. It sounds like it was yesterday, but it's not.
No, it's been a while. Real quick, we got a text. If you step down from a supervising position because of health reasons to a lesser but still supervising position, can a company take money per hour away from you?
Yes.
They can do whatever they want, right?
They can do whatever they want. You know, even if you have a job and they now say you have to be paid less.
Yeah.
Even if it's the same job, there's no law that says that they can't do that. I mean, you know, you have your options of leaving, of course, but as long as it's minimum wage, you can do that. Or if it violates a union contract, of course. I don't think we're talking about that.
No, it sounds like he just couldn't do one job, so he took another one. It's not, you know, of the same quality. Still a supervisory role, but a lesser one, as described in the text.
Yeah, just one of the things you just have to understand, the workplace is not a fair place. You know, it protects certain classes of people, and that's a good thing, but it doesn't mean that the employer makes a good decision. Doesn't mean that the employer has to be right. The employer can make up whatever he wants. It can be political. It could be that they don't like you.
Right.
Hey, my boss doesn't like me, and he's doing this, that, and the other thing.
Well.
That's the way it works.
Yeah, and you know, people say, well, you know, people with contracts are protected. Not always. You usually can get your money, but you can still be fired if you have a contract.
That's true.
And
the worst time to get a lawyer is when you don't have a job.
Right, exactly. Because how am I going to pay my lawyer?
Exactly.
I don't have a job. All right, listen, it's been fascinating
always. Yes.
And you'll be back next week.
No more
vacations. You're not anywhere exotic.
Nope. I'm here for at least 2 weeks.
Was anything on fire when you were in California?
It was, but we circumvented it.
Okay.
I think Big Sur was on fire, but we went around that place. So
well, good. We're glad you're back. We will see you next Sunday. Have a wonderful week.
All right,
you too. You'll be give the phone and email.
Sure. 312-332-7800 and kconti@kcontilaw.com.
And people can hear you Wednesday morning with Steve Cochran at 6:40.
That's right.
All right. Have a great night. Thank you for listening and being part of the program. Don't forget the first portion of the web exclusive podcast will be going live on Facebook in just a couple minutes. And then you can listen to the rest at WGNradio.com. So if you're always looking for a laugh, make sure you're on Facebook in just a couple minutes. Brian Noonan Show will go live. We will talk to you again next week.
Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. It is 9 o'clock. Here's Roger Badish.